This session is on nutrition. I'm trying to do a session on nutrition in an hour or less is like summarizing politics of Jesus in a sentence, I guess. But we'll try to give you a little bit of information, and then if you have other questions, maybe it'll lead you to sources of information or to community, to things that you want to talk about as a group. First, a little introduction as to why I'm sitting up here and you're sitting there, so I can figure out where you're at and you can find a little bit about where I'm at. I have an undergraduate degree in home economics education, and as you may know, home economics is more than cooking and sewing, but it does involve both of those aspects. And I did have a really excellent course in nutrition in college, and several other courses in foods related to food habits and meal planning and meal preparation and that kind of thing, which involves nutrition also. I taught high school home economics for 6 years, junior and senior high, and I taught all the foods classes in the school where I was at, so that was one of my favorite areas. I took some other classes while I was teaching, as far as teaching methods for foods and some different things with foods. I'm not a dietitian. I don't have the kinds of skills that dietitians have or the kinds of knowledge that they have, but one of the most important things about nutrition is knowing where to get the information and knowing who to believe and who not to believe, and knowing enough basic facts so that you can make some decisions by yourself. So I feel like I have that kind of knowledge, I guess. Chris Tim is going to be putting some information here also. She's a nurse, and do you want to say anything more? But her comments will be along the health lines.
Just that health professionals don't always get a lot of schooling on nutrition. So don't always believe your doctors.
This is a quote from a really good nutrition text that's in the library on doctors. Often doctors are trained in nutrition by doctors who heard it from another doctor who made it up. And it may be changing. Like in the last 10 years, the book says that doctors are actually having nutrition courses. But before that, they didn't know anything. And they're the guys that are writing these books that everybody's buying, by Dr. Curtis Wood and there's another guy that's written a lot of books. Yeah, Dr. Atkins, he's a quack. So don't believe what doctors say. Believe dietitians, believe home economists. They are pretty conservative usually, pretty traditional in their beliefs. Believe the Extension Service, believe some places, but don't believe your doctor. Okay. First, I'm going to give you a quiz, since I'm a teacher and that comes first. We'll see. This will maybe bring up some controversial things that you want to talk about later. I've just got 12 statements. Tell me if you think they're true or false. And I'll tell you the answer right away, but we won't discuss them right away. So if it's something that you want to hear an answer for and I haven't said it after a while, bring it up. True or false? Brown rice is more nutritious than white rice.
True.
That's true. Number two, brown eggs are more nutritious than white eggs.
False.
The shell makes
no difference.
Number three, large amounts of vitamin C will cure colds.
No.
False.
That's false. Vegetarian diets are unsafe.
False.
That's false. Synthetic vitamins are inferior to natural vitamins. That's false. They're the same. The vitamin C that you get in a vitamin tablet does the same thing in your body as the vitamin C in an orange. That doesn't mean you should take vitamin pills, but they do the same thing for you. You get more things in the orange than just the vitamin C, though. Number six, to eat healthily, you need to shop in a health food store.
No.
That's false. You guys are smarter than the average American. Number seven, it's necessary to take vitamin pills to be healthy.
False.
That's false. Honey is far superior to white sugar.
False.
That's false. Did you know honey has 64 calories in a tablespoon? Sugar has 46. If you're substituting honey for sugar, tablespoon for tablespoon, you're getting rooked. Medical doctors are one of the better sources of nutrition information.
False.
All food additives are bad.
False.
That's false. Potatoes are fattening.
False.
That's false. Okay, you do know more than I thought. That's the people that are going to say true, those are not talking up. Okay, want to talk about two basic areas and then get into some of the controversial things, some of the questions that you might have. One is just the basic going through the nutrients that you need to be healthy, and then an easy way to kind of understand that. The top half of the board are indicator nutrients. All that means is that if you're getting the sufficient amounts of all of those, chances are you're getting everything else too. There's many other things that you need, lots and lots of minerals, lots more vitamins than just A, B, and C, many other things. But if you're getting those, chances are you're doing okay. That means to get all those nutrients, you're going to have to eat a very balanced, a diet with a lot of variety. You can't get all those things from just one type of food. So if you're eating a variety of different foods that include those things there, you're eating a pretty good diet. Protein, vitamin A, thiamine, riboflavin, and niacin, all B vitamins, vitamin C, calcium, and iron. Okay, how many of you have studied nutrition?
I have.
Okay, how many have never had a nutrition class or never had anybody talk to you about nutrition? Okay. So we got some of both. I don't know if I'm going to be saying words that don't make sense to you. I'm not, you know, do you gear this to the seventh grader? Do you gear this to the senior high? I don't know just how to go about it. But if I say any words that just aren't making any sense, let me know. Okay, first of all, the nutrients. There are three nutrients that make up most of the foods. Nutrients are the things that are in foods. Okay, there are three nutrients that are making up most of every food that we eat: protein, carbohydrates, and fats. Protein's the only one listed there. Carbohydrates and fats are so prevalent they're not even listed on charts like that. Proteins, carbohydrates, fats. Foods are made up of a combination of those three things, plus they have added, there's vitamins and minerals. Those are not things that take up much space in foods. A milligram of a vitamin is a very large amount in a food. So the bulk of the food is made up of proteins, carbohydrates, and fats. And that's how the calorie amount in a food is figured too. Proteins, it's 4 calories per gram. Carbohydrates, that's an abbreviation, CHO, for carbon, hydrogen, and oxygen, is 4 calories per gram. And fats, 9 calories per gram. So if you look on your cereal box, and you all read the cereal box when you're not at Holden Village, right? It says that the 1 cup of corn flakes has 100 calories. It gives you the grams of protein, the grams of carbohydrate, and the grams of fat. That's the weight. If you take 1 cup of cornflakes and divide up how much of it is the protein substance, how much is the carbohydrate, and how much is the fat, that's the weight. And a gram weighs about the same as a paperclip. If you need some thinking about what is a gram, okay, that's like a paperclip. Okay, protein. So the protein part of a food gives you 4 calories per gram, and the same as the carbohydrates. Notice the fat gives you 9 calories per gram. That means anything that has a lot of fat in it has lots of calories. Just an example. Nuts are really high in fat. A cup of cashews has 785 calories. That's a lot of calories. Whereas a cup of sugar would have, let's see, should have brought a calculator. A cup of sugar will have about, I figure that different. But anyway, foods high in fat have, the calories mount up faster. So if you're thinking that you have to watch calories, if you can cut down on the amount of foods that you know are really fatty, that's going to help a lot. If you would put the same amount of jelly on your toast as butter, you know, if it was a choice between butter or jelly, the butter's going to have more than twice as many calories as the jelly. Okay, so foods are made up of those three things, basically, plus the vitamins and minerals. Protein is the substance that helps to build your body tissues. When a child is growing, they need more tissues, and as those more tissues are produced, that's using the protein that they've eaten. Okay, once you are not growing anymore, by the time you're a teenager, you still need the protein source because it helps to maintain your body tissues. They're wearing out constantly and it builds new ones. Plus, if you're hurt, it repairs the tissues. Chris, you want to say anything about diet when you're sick, how the protein?
Just that it's really important, and it's probably more important than you really realize, and your body is using up a lot to restore itself. And so before you eat anything else, I mean, if you're not feeling well and you're trying to get some food in, at least try to get the proteins in, because those will be the most important to bring yourself back.
Does your body use up more proteins when it's sick than when it's not?
To restore. Well, not that it uses more to, not necessarily that it uses up, well, yeah, that it uses up more. I guess that's one.
That's why they feed Jell-O to sick people.
Yeah, that's why they give them Jell-O.
No, Jell-O's not a good protein source. It's a doctor's food. Okay, protein is made up of amino acids. They're tiny little, if you think of Tinker Toys and the little bars with the little things that just stick together, amino acids are molecules like that. Protein is made up of amino acids, and there's lots of different amino acids, which just means there's different combinations of all these little Tinker Toys. Okay, you need a complete protein, which means you need all the right pieces for food to be a good protein source. Really good protein sources are meats, so all kinds of meat products, different animal products like milks and cheese and that kind of thing are really excellent protein sources. But as you know, vegetarians don't eat meat, so there must be some way that you can get your protein besides just meats. What else can you do? Okay, beans can be a complete protein by combining them with something else. Complementary proteins means you can put grains with bean products, or you can put grains with milk products to give you a complete protein. So if you have a glass of milk with a meal, that's going to help make the bread complete in that meal. It's going to help make rice a complete protein. It's going to help you make the best use of all the incomplete protein foods in that meal. And Jessie's not here right now, but she would be a real good person to talk to about vegetarian diets and complementary proteins. Because you can have a very good diet without eating meats if you know enough about it. You can't just be a vegetarian without knowing anything. You have to know a little bit about nutrition, a little bit about how to combine foods together to be healthy. This is a really good book, Laurel's Kitchen. It's a cookbook, vegetarian type recipes, and lots of them have weird ingredients that you'd have to go to a health food store to buy. But I was really impressed by the nutrition information in here, because I was expecting it to be not very good, but it's real sound, good nutrition information. It would give you lots of hints and helps on eating less meat in your diet if that's something you want to do. And More with Less cookbook is really good too for that.
What is that?
More with Less cookbook. Just reading this cookbook is fun because they have all kinds of little hints all over it of, you know, what to do.
Yeah.
So get into cookbooks, those are both good.
Dave asked what kind of beans he suggested.
Okay.
And green beans, and I said no.
Dried beans, the kinds of beans that we eat a lot of here. Kidney beans, and pinto beans, refried beans, but not green beans and that kind of beans.
What the green vegetables?
Green vegetables don't have protein, no. They're good for other things.
I have a couple questions. Are meats complete protein?
Yeah, meats are complete protein.
Milk is too.
And milk is. So animal products are.
How soon do you have to, if you're talking about complementary proteins, how much of a delay? You have to eat them together. It's the same exact time.
I can't give you a minute.
You can eat one for dinner and one for breakfast next morning, and they complement each other?
I think, no, by noon, your body's already digested your breakfast food.
Okay.
Because it only takes your body several hours to get through that process. So eaten at the same meal. But in here, they list a lot of possibilities of things that we eat together, you know, things that are not unusual combinations. Cereal and milk. A peanut butter sandwich, macaroni and cheese, pizza and lasagna, things that have everything all thrown together, you know, before you even start. Cornbread and beans, or like split pea soup and ham. You can put a meat with an incomplete protein and make the incomplete protein complete too. It's like, it's hard to figure out how it all works, but any good protein source with an incomplete protein will help the incomplete protein be complete. But you can put two incomplete proteins together also, like peanuts and bread, peanut butter and bread. So they're neither one is complete by itself, but when you put them together, somehow they're both better for you. So it doesn't work out mathematically, but it does work out.
Now, when you say bread, should you qualify that?
Okay.
Whole grain bread, because white bread,
White bread is enriched, so it's got some things. Okay, whole wheat products. Whole wheat products are, are better for you than white bread products in that they have all the natural things that are in the bread. White bread has been enriched, which means they took everything out when they made it and they threw some stuff back in. And that's what white bread is. That's what white rice is. That's what, you know, plain spaghetti is. During the processing of a wheat kernel, it's got the outside of the kernel, and then there's the outside is the bran, then there's an endosperm, which is a little part in it, the endosperm is the white part like that, and the bran is in there. The endosperm is what they use in white flour. And most of the nutrients in wheat flour are in the other two parts. They're in the bran and the wheat germ. So white bread is just taking the part without the nutrients, and then they make flour out of it. Now they're going to stick back in some iron, some B vitamins, thiamine, riboflavin, and niacin, so that it has pretty much what it had before, but it doesn't have the fiber. And your body needs a certain amount of fiber to process all the food that you're eating and to make the intestines work well. So it doesn't have the fiber, and it doesn't have everything that we don't know is good for us that was in the original wheat kernel anyway. Nutritionists and dietitians and scientists are discovering all these little minerals and vitamins that we never knew existed in foods. And so whole grain products have those natural things in there, whereas white products don't have it because we haven't discovered that it was there in the first place. Does that make any sense? Okay. So, they can't put it back if they didn't realize that it was important and that it was there in the first place. So whole grain products are better for you than white bread products, just because of the more natural. But that doesn't say that white bread is absolutely horrible. If you have little kids that for some reason it will not eat any whole grain products, they're not going to die. You know, it's not that serious. Okay. Protein foods also supply us with some energy. And they do that especially when we don't get enough energy from our carbohydrates and fats. Carbohydrates are sugars and starchy foods. It's everything that's high in sugar that you can think of, like jelly and Kool-Aid and sugar and candy, that kind of stuff. That's a sugar food. That's a carbohydrate. Mm-hmm. Carbohydrates are also starchy food. It's our breads, potatoes,
macaroni,
grains, those kinds of things. Okay, now, if you're going to choose between sugars and starches, which do you think has more good stuff for you?
Bread.
The starches. The bread has more than carbohydrates, whereas the candy has energy. You're going to get energy from candy if you eat it, like Lifesavers, you know, sweet, sugary stuff like that. You'll get energy, which is what your body needs. It needs energy. It needs calories to burn to stay alive. But if you're going to eat more nutritiously, you can get that same energy from foods that are starchy, called complex carbohydrates, breads, grains, and all those kinds of foods. Those are good carbohydrate foods. They're primarily for energy, but they also supply lots of vitamins, the B vitamins, and they supply some iron, some other nutrients. So starchy foods are good for you. Potatoes are good for you. Bread is good for you because it gives you the energy that you need. And bread is pretty low in calories, so it's like down here, the nutrient density of foods is something to consider. I mean, you could eat, you know, if you know that milk is good for you, you could have all your milk in the form of shakes and ice cream and that kind of stuff, and you'd do okay, but it's got lots and lots of calories with it too, and you have to balance the calories, the number of calories you eat with the number of calories you burn. So you want foods that are dense in nutrients, foods that give you lots of calories for little, or lots of nutrients for little calories. It's like you have money to go to the store, you want to get the best deal, you want to get foods that have a lot of good stuff and not so many extra calories. Whereas empty calorie foods are foods that have just calories, like jelly. There's nothing too redeeming about, you know, the jelly that you put in your toast. You can't say that, oh, I'm having my fruit for the day. You know, that doesn't quite work. But you want foods that have a lot of nutrients but not so many calories. So breads and grain products are really good that way. Fats are the three major nutrients. Fats are concentrated energy, like we said before, more than twice as much, many calories per gram as the carbohydrates and protein. Fats are also necessary. You think, oh, lots of calories, I'm going to cut way back, but you cannot eliminate fats from your diet. Fats are the only way that your body can carry around the vitamins that are fat soluble. Some of the vitamins dissolve in the fats in your body, some dissolve in the waters in your body, and the only way that the fat-soluble vitamins can be transported through your body is with some fats in your diet. So you cannot totally eliminate fats from your diet. First of all, it would be very difficult to eliminate all the butter and all the fat that's in meat and all the fat that's in egg and all the fat that's in milk and cheese. It's really hard to eliminate all of that from your body. You do need some of it. You can cut back on the amount of butter you put in your toast and the amount of mayonnaise you put in your sandwiches, but you do need some to carry your fat-soluble vitamins. You also need some for protection. If there's no fat in your body organs are, there's nothing to protect them. Somebody could hit you and, you know, they're hitting your liver, you know, so you need a certain amount of fat to protect your body organs. You need a certain amount for warmth, but you know, you have to decide whether the right amount is there. Fats are also really good part of a diet, part of a meal, because they stick with you longer. They make you feel full longer. So if you're eating a meal that has no fats in it, say you have a lettuce salad with low-cal dressing that doesn't have any fat, and you have some carrots and some green peppers on it, probably, you know, very little fat in that meal, that's not going to stick with you as much as a meal that has just a little bit of fat. Okay, questions right now.
One thought on the fats with infants, there's sometimes a tendency to, you know, if the baby's real chubby, to hurry up and put them on 1% or 2% or something. And I don't remember whether it's 6 months or a year, but anyway, for quite a while, they're supposed to be getting more of the fats. They need it.
Okay, well, For energy, I would say, yeah.
Well, it isn't just that, it's the way their digestion works too. Their requirements are different than an adult's.
And, yeah, like infant nutrition, doctors are saying, or people are saying things different now than they did a while ago. So you can't do things the same way as your grandmother did when they start solids and all that kind of stuff. They found out other things.
For sure. Another real unusual thing that we were coming across was babies getting into trouble getting honey before they were a year. And we had an occasional case of botulism caused from that, from the toxin and all. Because they're again, their digestion is so different that they couldn't handle it.
Are nuts a complete drug?
Nuts are, no, I don't think they're. Don't think they're complete. Michael?
What?
Are nuts a complete protein?
Right.
No.
Mary?
Yes.
You know, you're saying salad doesn't make you as full or whatever you put on it. If you put it on just a little bit of 1,000-pound dressing, would that make you fuller?
The fat in it is going to stick with you a little bit longer. Also depends on how many cups of it you eat, too.
Mary?
Yeah.
Grits that we had tonight, do you suppose that the heart of the corn was in it?
I would guess so.
I would think so.
Yeah, the corn there and the milk that you drank with your meal, that gives you complete protein. So if you had milk for supper, you did okay.
Well, is there some complete protein in just the grain by itself, but it just maximizes it by completing it?
There's like 9 or 10 amino acids, and you need all of them in certain amounts to match up to make good use of it. Now, I don't know what the diagram for corn looks like, but you're not getting much protein from just the corn. But if you can complete it with some milk, then you're doing better.
Does that seem like the breakfast cereal, you know, granted a lot of them are processed out, but, you know, combining it with milk, you're still getting some protein.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it might be a misconception that if you're having cereal and milk, you're not getting protein.
Well, you are, though. Yeah.
If you eat an incomplete protein, is it doing any?
Your body cannot make use of it. No, your body.
The protein, just the rest, whatever else you think.
Yeah. It can use up anything else, but it doesn't know what to do with that protein, with those leftover pieces, kind of.
Something you mentioned earlier in our little quiz about synthetic vitamins, I read somewhere that your body can't make use of some vitamins and minerals unless you take them in with certain other kinds of foods.
Okay, I can't give you a specific example right there, but there's such an interdependence of nutrients. Some examples, your body cannot fully utilize the iron that you get in foods unless there's some vitamin C around, because vitamin C helps your body to use the iron. Vitamin E helps your body to use vitamin A and C. It helps your body so it doesn't destroy those. Calcium and vitamin D and phosphorus all work together. So there's such an interdependence that just taking a vitamin pill for breakfast is not going to do as much for you, because there's not all those extra other things that we don't know about and that we don't, you know how they work together. So synthetic vitamins, if you think you need extra of some vitamin because you know you're not getting it, then a vitamin pill can help you there. But if you're relying on vitamin pills, you're not getting the good stuff.
Another thing that makes sense then is to take your vitamins with your meal.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah.
And something else that makes sense to me, I don't know if it's true, but if you're taking in a food that has a particular vitamin, the food may have the other nutrient that is necessary for your body to be able to use that.
Okay, an example is milk. Milk is fortified with vitamin D, and it also has calcium and phosphorus, and those three are all necessary for any of one of them to work. So sometimes that's done for you. The combinations are just there. Sven.
Maybe this is, but I know some people, you know, that like when they have, especially when they have a cold, they'll just snort down the sea, you know. I mean, just take the bottle and just pump it out, you know, and they're already horse pills. I mean, this big around, you know. Is that, and they'll say, well, you know, you need more sea because then they're really fighting in there. Is that?
Okay, I'll say a little bit, then Chris has a comment on that too, I think. Okay, number one, vitamin C is a water-soluble vitamin. That means that it stays in your body a short time and it's excreted along with anything else that floats around in liquids in your body. So vitamin C is water soluble, remember that. It does not stay with you. That's why you need vitamin C foods every day. Okay, Chris?
Just that your kidneys are going to get rid of your excess vitamin C anyway, so you're just doing, I mean, you're just wasting money by buying the vitamins.
What about, okay, like you get one of those, you know, you get one of those tablets, you know, it says whatever, 500 milligrams or whatever, you know, and it's already 10 times what your body needs for the day.
It's wasting money.
And then you eat 50 of them. It's a waste.
Okay.
And the other thing, with vitamin C, if a pregnant woman takes it and takes huge amounts, and then the baby is born and doesn't have it, the baby can develop scurvy.
Okay.
Because the baby's shorter.
Okay, another thing with vitamin C. Let's see.
Yeah. It's expecting it or whatever the happens.
It's something else about vitamin C. Oh, vitamin C and colds. There's been a lot of studies because people will swear by the fact that they don't get their cold then. Vitamin C can kind of serve as an antihistamine, like some of the, like Dristan or something. It can mask the symptoms of a cold, but you're going to get the cold anyway. So I don't know if you want to, you know, take a vitamin C tablet or take Dristan. I would think that I would feel safer taking Dristan. I don't know. But, okay. Dave.
One question I have. I've heard about vitamin C that if you take, say, your 100% of your recommended amount all at once, it won't. You only absorb about a third of it or something.
I've never heard that. I don't know. You can get 100% of your vitamin C from a glass of orange juice. And I've never heard that your body doesn't...
Water, I was thinking that water solubility.
Okay, that it doesn't stay with you all day. That's true, maybe. But I don't know that it doesn't use all of it right away, so I don't know. That's a question. Yeah.
Why do you have the juice in the refrigerator then? I mean... You get it already once a day. Why do we have that extra stuff sitting there?
Orange juice and juices are good for you. They supply energy. They supply your vitamin C. They're just a good food. That's better for you than drinking Coke.
Can I make another response to that? I don't know, but it just seems rational to me. Since vitamin C is water soluble, okay, you drink your juice in the morning. Well, then it disappears, so you gotta have some
lemonade. But she was just saying that once you get it.
I don't know.
Like off of Dave's question.
Yeah, I don't know about an answer to Dave's. I wouldn't be worried. And
those people that have colds, there is juice in it. I'll be over here and be quiet.
Yeah, but that's only because you tend to get dehydrated.
Yeah, you need lots of liquids when you're sick.
Take orange juice instead of water.
Okay.
This might be a crazy term to toss out, but I'm a nurse friend is always talking about electrolytes. And something about juices and electrolytes.
I don't know anything about electrolytes.
Something to do with how your nerves function. I don't know.
She's talking about sodium and potassium and those things. I don't know what all she means with those.
Well, particularly if you're sick, she said she keeps saying, well, you need a lot of juice to
if you, for instance, like I say, a little kid, I keep getting back to babies, that has diarrhea, you would very shortly get shorter sodium potassium and get dreadful.
Yeah, people that have diarrhea. So it's a mineral balance is what you're talking about there, more than a nutrition thing.
Yeah, sodium potassium mostly.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, vitamin C is heat sensitive also, isn't it?
Okay.
I wonder about Chris, the value in rose hips tea or hot tomato soup.
It doesn't, isn't it?
But okay, vitamin C escapes into cooking water, but if you're drinking the liquid, like you're having all the soup, you're drinking the tea, I think the vitamin C is still there. I think, I'm not positive with that. Vitamin C is very... what do I want to say? It's very unstable. Vitamin C will... If you're cooking broccoli, vitamin C goes right in the water. If you peel potatoes and cook them in water and you throw the water out, the vitamin C was in the water. That's why moms put the potato water in the gravy, you know?
And the bread.
Yeah, and the bread. Okay, other vitamins are very sensitive too. Riboflavin is destroyed by light. So just because you think you're getting everything that you're getting, you maybe aren't. But if you're making use of the cooking water, you're making use of the juice and the tomato soup, I think you're getting your vitamin C there. Unless, of course, you cook the tomatoes and pour it off that juice. I don't know. Okay, there's basically two types of vitamins. The water-soluble, that's vitamin C, and all the B vitamins are water-soluble. That's thiamine, riboflavin, niacin are all B vitamins, and there's many more. There's folicin, pyridoxine, vitamin B12, pantothenic acid, et cetera, et cetera. All B vitamins. The reason that they're all B vitamins and that we call them by names and rather than you know, vitamin A and then there's lots of B vitamins, when they were discovering the vitamins, they discovered vitamin B. And then they discovered that, hey, this isn't one vitamin, this is really 16 others. So that's why there are names for the B vitamins and the other vitamins don't have names. That makes any sense. Okay, the fat-soluble vitamins are A and D and vitamin E and vitamin K. They are dissolved in fat, so they stay in the food. They're much more stable. You can cook carrots in water, and the vitamin A in the carrots will stay in the carrots. Carrots are an excellent source of vitamin A. Any dark green and deep yellow fruit or vegetable is an excellent source of vitamin A. So vitamin A, you just think of the color. If it's really a dark, deep vegetable, dark, deep color of vegetable, it's probably got a lot of vitamin A. That's not always the case, but you can be pretty sure of it. So spinach and broccoli and carrots and squash, good vitamin A sources. And
liver,
like one serving of liver has 908% of your vitamin A. That's because in animals, the vitamin A is stored in the liver. Your body also stores your vitamin A. And it stores in your liver. That only makes sense. So your body stores this. If you don't eat carrots for a week, you don't have anything else that's good vitamin A food, if your body has stores of it, it's still using that. So it's not something that has to be replenished daily or you know, anything like that. Fat-soluble vitamins. A, D, which is what's in milk, and vitamin E, which is in so many foods that you don't have to worry about not getting enough of it, and vitamin K, which is also very prevalent. And you don't have to believe any of the stories about vitamin E. They're not true either.
You can see that a lot of the health food industry, particularly the vitamin industry, is really a
It is.
It's just, you know, it's just kind of fun stuff on it.
Well, isn't it vitamin E can cause, I forget, it's brain abscess, something or other, if you get large quantities.
There's a disease called hypervitaminosis. I don't know which vitamin would do that, but if you...
The fat-soluble one.
Yeah, any fat-soluble vitamin that you take vitamin pills for, you can build up so much that you can get sick. It can be a poison in your system. If you take vitamin A pills and you eat your carrots and you eat your liver... And
for vegetables, doesn't your body won't utilize it? I'm trying to think. There's some difference from, well, the prepared vitamin tablets and eating liver compared to eating the vitamin A in the other foods.
I don't know what you're saying.
That it's not a danger of getting an overdose from maybe spinach or the vegetables.
Kids can. I don't know what adults do, but we had one baby. I'll never forget that. Healthy looking kid that came in was real jaundiced, you know, and they tried to figure out what was wrong, and they'd just been getting way too much of the yellow vegetables and all. The baby liked all those things, and he just looked like a little pumpkin after a while.
Yeah.
That's how your body tries to get rid of it if it overdoses, mm-hmm. and it goes out through the skin. So people who eat a lot of it, they, their skin just turns orange.
Yeah.
It really looks
But nobody that has a normal diet or even eats carrots every day has to worry about it. It's when you start taking vitamin tablets to supplement it because you think, you're not, you know, don't worry if you eat carrots every day of the week or if you have liver twice a week. Normal diet, you're not going to OD on vitamin A, but don't go out and buy the pills either. Okay, what vitamin A does. Vitamin A helps your eyes adjust from light to dark so that when you're driving at night, the blinding lights that come at you don't blind you. It helps some with your bone growth. It helps some with your teeth formation. The vitamins do so many little things to help your system out. And vitamin A's main thing is with your eyes. The B vitamins help digestion, help your nerves, help you use the energy that's in foods. They help with just a lot of body processes. And this book is really good. If you want to read up everything, this is an excellent textbook. And it not only is a good textbook, but it has little blue sections at the end of the chapters that talk about vitamin C and all the other controversies that you might think of. So it's good that way. The B vitamins are found in meats. They're found really a lot in grain products. Dried peas and beans, like the beans, kidney beans, lentils, and that kind of stuff. Or, kidney beans, pinto beans, that kind of thing. Lentils, nuts. Riboflavin is found in milk. So just eating a balanced diet of lots of different foods are going to give you your B vitamins. If you're vegetarian, you're not eating any meats, you're not getting your vitamin B12 because that's only found in animal sources. So you have to figure out a way to get your vitamin B12.
I heard something about containers in which milk comes in, that something about how the cardboard ones are better because the light doesn't kill off the riboflavin or something.
Riboflavin is destroyed by light. So if the light can get through the container, it can kill off the riboflavin. Now, the cartons that we use here are kind of they're not clear plastic, so I don't know if that's enough to prevent it or not. But the glass bottles that milk used to be brought home in, the light could go right through. And, you know, sit out on your porch for a couple hours, you know.
How do you get vitamin B12?
I think strict vegetarians take supplements, take a vitamin pill with B12, if they're not getting any animal foods. Now, there's different types of vegetarians. See, there's, okay. The strict vegetarian, the ovo-vegetarian, which will eat eggs, so there they're getting, the ovo-lacto-vegetarian, which will eat eggs and milk products, and the lacto-vegetarian, which will eat milk products. So if you're getting milk or cheese, that's an animal source, and you're getting your B12. But if you're strictly vegetables, and fruits and breads, you're not getting B12. So it's only the very strict vegetarians. Okay, vitamin C. We talked a little bit about the fallacies, but vitamin C holds your cells together. It's the collagen or the cementing material that holds your cells together. If somebody bruises really easily every time they get touched, they get a black and blue mark, that's because their cells aren't holding together. Every time they get touched, it breaks the blood vessels. It also holds your teeth in. You can see pictures of kids with scurvy from other countries where their teeth are and their gums are all sore and their teeth are falling out. It's because their body isn't being held together. The vitamin C is what does that. Vitamin C also works with iron, helps your body to use the iron that you get in foods. It's found mostly in citrus fruits, but lots of other fruits and vegetables are really good too. Strawberries, broccoli, cantaloupe, potatoes, tomatoes, green peppers. Lots of fruits and vegetables for vitamin C. Okay, calcium builds your bones and teeth, good muscles, tone, and that kind of thing. Milk products is the best source for calcium. Dark green leafy vegetables are also good. Dried peas and beans are good, but milk is your primary source for calcium. Now, how many of you know people who are maybe 40, 50 or older that think they don't need to drink milk anymore? Okay.
Two.
In addition to cheese or other dairy products?
No, cheese. Just drink. Together. The milk equivalent, kind of. Chris, do you want to say anything about that?
Just to emphasize that it is important to keep drinking milk as you age, because your bones are going to need it still to prevent what's called osteoporosis, which is when your bones become more porous as you age. And so also, if you keep active too, you'll also be able to retain the calcium in your bones as you grow older. So by doing both, staying active and keep drinking milk.
Are you meaning milk equivalents too? Or cottage cheese?
Other things that have the calcium.
Yes.
Ice cream.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It's the calcium that's
in the milk. So the only reason why more women have osteoporosis than men.
Yeah.
Yes.
They don't drink their milk, I would say.
Yes, exactly. Women require more than men.
And they're probably the first ones to cut it out because they think, I'm dieting, now I'm going to cut out the milk. So that's not the real good move. Iron. Iron is needed for the hemoglobin in your blood. Hemoglobin is a red part of your blood. It carries the oxygen to your cells. Okay, if you don't have any red part in your blood, if you're not getting your iron, your cells are not getting oxygen, your cells are tired, you are tired, you feel real dragged out. Iron does not give you energy, but iron helps your cells to be alive and helps you be to
No.
I didn't even know that. I was thinking of my mother who decided she'd take calcium pills. Mm. And then now she's finally drinking milk again. But,
Thank you.
Okay, are you confused? Those of you that haven't studied nutrition before, do you think you can go eat a balanced diet now knowing what we just went over?
Yeah.
It gets easier. See, they've come up with the basic four food groups, which makes it all simple. It's good. You just can't rely on it 100% of the way. But basic four just takes the nutrients here that you need and divides them into four categories, or groups them together into like kinds of foods. And so if you're eating a variety of foods and you're eating foods from these four groups and you're eating at least a minimal amount of foods from each of the groups, you're probably doing pretty good. It doesn't include everything and it doesn't take care of every little shortcoming, but it's something that you can think about when you're eating, you're going through a day, you can think, okay, have I had at least something from each of these groups, and you can know if you're helping your body out that way. Four groups: the meat group, the milk group, fruits and vegetables, breads and cereals. The meat group, 2 servings a day. And the milk group, at least 2 servings for adults, more for kids. That's because they are building bones, and they need the extra things that are in milk, the extra calcium to build bones. Yeah.
I just want to say something about milk in kids too, that I read where it was a good idea to give them skim milk or 2% milk to save room for foods that are high in iron, because iron deficiency anemia is a common problem among children that often goes undiagnosed.
Okay. Think of the calorie difference in different kinds of milk. Say you need 4 glasses of milk a day. A glass of skim milk is about 90 calories. Regular whole milk is maybe 150. That's 60 calories times 4 glasses. That's a lot of calories that could be used for for like iron-rich foods and other types of foods. So you can save a lot of calories by, if you're cutting calories, one of the first things you can do is cut the skim milk and save a lot of calories that way. Okay, fruits and vegetable group, 4 servings a day, and breads and cereals, 4 servings. Okay, thing about the basic 4 that many people don't think about is that you have to know what a serving means. Okay, it's usually a pretty normal amount of food if you think in normal amounts of food terms. Like, okay, the meat group. 2 to 3 ounces is considered a serving. Okay, if you go to McDonald's, get a Big Mac, get a quarter pounder. That's supposed to be 4 ounces. By the time they cook it, it's down to 2 or 3. That's a serving of meat. So it's just it's not a very big hamburger that you have to get a serving of meat. 2 eggs is a serving. Like a bratwurst would be a serving. A piece of fish about like so. It doesn't have to be the whole thing of cod. That is not a serving. But 2 ounces of meat. If you want to get your meat from dried beans, a cup of beans could be considered a serving from the meat group. So a cup of, once they're cooked, a cup after they're cooked, yeah. A fourth of a cup of peanut butter can be considered a serving. However, you're probably not going to eat a fourth of a cup of peanut butter. Lots of calories. Cottage cheese and cheese can be considered servings. The book here did not give the amounts. I think it's like 2 ounces of cheese could be considered a serving. An ounce of cheese is like a slice. Like if you get back in the grocery store, the American cheese, it's in nice little slices. Each of those is about an ounce. So you figure about that amount, which is about like a slice of cheese here. When it's sliced, that's about an ounce. Okay, for the milk group, about an ounce or an ounce and a half of cheese could count as a serving. About that same amount could count as a serving from the meat group, but I don't think you're doing your body too much good if you're counting it in both groups. So you need that protein in the milk group too. That's getting a little confusing. Okay, milk group. Milk, cottage cheese. A cup of cottage cheese could be equal to a cup of milk, and you need 2 cups of milk a day. An ounce or an ounce and a half of cheese. A cup of yogurt, a cup of pudding. 1.5 to 2 cups of ice cream. However, you consider your nutrient density. 2 cups of ice cream is going to taste really good, but it's got a lot more calories than a cup of milk. So if you're burning up the calories, you can have the ice cream, no problem. But if you're not burning up the calories, pick the milk. Fruits and vegetables group. 1 whole fruit, like an apple, a banana, an orange. 1/2 a grapefruit, what you consider a serving. 1/2 a cup of juice, so one of those juice glasses can be considered a serving from the fruit and vegetable group. 1/2 a cup of cooked beans or something like that.